Welcome, we're Books and Baddies,
a reader's podcast for hotties who read hot books.
From YA slow burns to all-out monster fucking.
Join us as we break down shame,
embrace sexuality,
chase romance butterflies,
and find joy in literature that calls to us.
If you were that kid reading in the back of the classroom,
this podcast is for you.
Yeah.
And also us.
Yes. It's mostly for us.
But mostly us. For us.
But it's also for you.
But I'm so glad you're here anyway. Yeah. All right. Well, I'll get us started because I forced everybody to be here today. I'm Mary. I'm reading The Courting of Bristol Keats by my YA, now NA queen, Mary Pearson.
Oh, look at that callback.
Right? Yeah.
Hi, I'm Tiff, and I am currently reading Wind and Truth by Brandon Sanderson. I've been reading for like a full day now, and it feels like no progress. This book is so huge, dude, but it's great. I'm having a great time.
Huge.
Was it you that said that the pages feel like the flimsy pages in the hotel Bibles?
Yeah, no. The pages are like translucent.
That's horrifying.
Like, if you hold them up to the light, you can see the other side. Also,
and it's still huge.
It's genuinely as thick. Like, if you lay it on its side, the height of the book is as thick as like half a regular can. It's crazy.
I need more instant gratification than that. I want to finish a page and be like, yes. Not
yeah,
like,
and he had to like switch printers to
because they wouldn't print the book. Because it was so big.
How many pages? Like 2
like
million?
Like 1,300.
Oh my God.
So it's interesting. I'm also reading it. It's like 440,000 words. Oh my, it is a massive,
shorter
massive
than Manacled.
Tome.
That's just, well, yes, that's true.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Read that shit in 2 days.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
I want to say it was 440. I'll double check that. But my name is Cross. I'm also reading Wind and Truth, which is why I'm piping up right now because it came out this week. Oh, almost 500,000. 491.
Okay, it's actually 2.2 Deathly Hallows is, if anyone was wondering.
Yeah, 491,000 words is what Wind and Truth is.
Okay, so it's more than
almost 500,000. Yeah.
I'm Lindsay, and I'm reading The Mountain in the Sea by Ray Naylor and Emily Wilde's Map of the Otherlands by Heather Fawcett.
Ooh, double fisting.
Stop it.
I think I just saw that you were reading those and added them to my Goodreads, maybe. Or maybe I saw it in our little nope notes here. Hi, I'm Addie, and I just finished The Scholar and the Last Fairy Door by H.G. Perry. And I'm in the biggest book hangover of my life, and all the baddies have been hearing about it.
We've been giving you recs. We've been trying.
I know.
I believe in you. You can recover.
I believe. I will read a book again.
I believe. Hi, I'm Kelsey. I'm also believing in myself today, but my book is not as long as anyone else's. I just started My Vampire Plus One by Jenna Levine. My fangs are out, sluts. I'm living, I'm laughing, I'm loving. It's great.
Sounds like a really thick fantasy book.
It's not.
Hey, is this the Vampire Raylo that got published?
I don't know if it's Vampire Raylo. The first book was my roommate is a vampire, and this one is called My Vampire Plus One. It's a vampire
is that
fake,
like the
vampire
Disney Channel movie?
Fake dating. That would be very funny. They're comedies. I don't think it's Raylo.
Okay, the first one of this is Raylo.
There's a good chance because he was very grumpy.
Yeah, that sounds
so,
right.
So these days I'm like, is it grumpy or is it Raylo? Like,
is it grumpy or is it Kylo Ren?
Yeah, it's literally that. But yeah, I'll let you know what I think of this one. Yeah,
well, great. Yeah. Can't wait to hear about it. You said the title and it reminded me of the My Mom is Dating a Vampire Disney Channel movie.
I had that thought
up with early 2000s, I would think. Well, anyway, hi, welcome to the episode where I force my friends to read a book I was obsessed with like 4 years ago.
Yay!
I'm living the fucking dream over here. Welcome, welcome, welcome. We've been talking about this book for about as long as the podcast has existed, I would say. So welcome to Red Queen. And no, it's not Tiff I'm talking about or me on my period. It is the book by Victoria Aveyard. Welcome.
Yay. But we always love reading things Yay. That our friends recommend to us, hence why we're here on this ding-dang podcast. But Mary, I'm curious why you picked this book. Why is this the book that you wanted all the baddies to dig our little baddie fingers into?
Well, I'll take you on memory lane, shall I?
Please.
I had a pal who recommended
the Selection series to me. And so I walked into one of my favorite bookstores, which is Cherry Street Books in Alexandria. And I was like, hey, I'm looking for the Selection series. And the person selling, you know, the bookseller was like, no, that series is trash. You don't want to read that. And I was like, oh, okay. Do you have any recommendations?
Oh, God.
She's like, try this one. And I was like, okay. So it was like January 2020-ish. And I just associate it with like the good, no, not January 2021. So I just associate it with like the good vibes of COVID, where like everyone was just kind of like home all the time. I had a lot of tea, not the really sad parts of COVID, which I do acknowledge, but like the cozy bits where life was just a little bit slower. We were taking our time with things. Mm. And also this whole friend group was like starting, and I was kind of re-entering my reading era and my YA era more specifically. So I had to pick that one, not because necessarily it's my favorite YA book of all time. It is not, but because it I associate it with the start of this friend group. And so I had to take you on this journey with me.
Mary.
Yes.
I mean,
yeah, I love
like
you guys.
Yeah, you're like our YA. Tiff's our red queen. You're like our YA queen. So I love that you chose a book that you love, but also that you love because of its connection to you loving us, mm-hmm. which is like so fucking sweet.
I'm just so nice. What can I say?
I know.
No,
I feel
that's
really
fine.
Bad now.
That's fine. Rip it a new one. I don't care. Honestly, the funniest thing is, I feel like most of you like Selection more than you like Red Queens.
I did like Selection more than Red Queen.
I will say I thought this episode was about Tiff, the Red Queen of our friend group, so I have to revisit my notes because they're all just
you're like shit
about how hot she is. So
you just read through her text message thread. You're like, I did it.
I was like, oh, hot, hot, hot.
Really good friend, really smart, funny, red hair.
ASMR.
Speaking of, okay, truly
gives
though,
the best advice.
If there was an author who could be in our friend group from my submission, because I can't always be recommending Kelsey's best friends, I think Victoria Aveyard would fit in really well with our friend group. She's hilarious. Please follow her on TikTok. She's awesome.
Is she a big TikTok presence?
Mm-hmm. Yes, deeply. Yeah.
I think she also like posts a lot of content on TikTok that speaks to like it pokes through the fourth wall for readers and like mm-hmm. book talk, and talks about like the publishing industry and about like the fan fiction to publishing pipeline and mm-hmm. about like fan fiction that people have written about her books and things and like mm-hmm. writing fan fiction and consuming fan fiction. So I feel like she's just very approachable and also very real. And like people comment like, you should write a book like this. And she'll like reply to it and be like, what if I do?
This is a beautiful tee up, but please don't come for my Wikipedia mommy job.
Oh, I'm sorry, mommy.
Yes,
please.
So sorry.
Sorry. I'll sit on my hands.
I've got this ready.
Kelsey has this
great
one thing.
Thank you for
she
the
really
intro.
Needs this.
Yeah. Just one
I get
thing.
One, like, let me have my moment. Thank you.
go ahead, Wiki
okay.
mommy.
Okay, I got you. Thank you. I should be more generous, but I'm not going to be. Victoria Aveyard. Let's talk about her. She's an author.
Hey, Victoria. How are you?
And a screenwriter. This was cool. I learned this about her from her own website because it's really easy to access. I act like this job is hard. It's not. Google's free for now. She was born and raised in a small town in Western Massachusetts. Okay, East Coast girly pop. She has a BFA in writing for film and television from the University of Southern California School of Cinematic Arts.
Fight on
All
Trojans.
Right, slay. Yeah, I love that you knew that. Amazing.
I went there.
you did? What?
Marching band. Yes, her freshman year. That's how she's in that YouTube video.
So this is your close personal friend. I just knew you were in California,
no,
but
I wanted
didn't.
To be my first personal friend. No.
I'm taking this from Mary. It's Liz's.
Look at Mary. Mary's like getting a box of Kleenex. She's not okay.
You two can share. You two can share, I promise.
Okay, fine.
As we know, Victoria is the author of Red Queen, which we're talking about today, which is a number one New York Times bestselling and USA Today bestselling series. So it made both the big lists. And then she's also known for the number one New York Times bestseller, Realm Breaker, which I haven't read. Mary, have you read that?
I own it. I haven't read it.
Okay. Come back to us with your review.
Yeah.
So some really quick background on Red Queen in relation to the author. It was her debut book. And it was published in 2015. It like really quickly became a commercial success. It debuted at number one on the New York Times bestseller list, which is badass as hell. And I put in the paragraph about like the background on the book, but I'm not going to read it because we're literally going to spend the rest of the episode doing that. So instead, I will close
2015. And I feel like we were all exiting our like Divergent Hunger Games era. And this would have been a natural segue. How did I not know about this book until 4 years
ago? I have no idea. No, I know. It's really interesting too when it like makes the bestsellers list, but like we're late to the news. Because I think I too read it in like 2021. I feel like it was going around TikTok or social media or something, and I got sucked in. But anyway, right now Victoria lives in Los Angeles with her partner and her dog, Indy. Her books have been translated into over 40 languages and counting. And most importantly, in my opinion, this was, I think, Tiff's commentary when we were working on this. She looks like a yassified Stephanie Meyer. So.
I was going to say that I live under a rock, so I didn't know who she was. But I unfortunately am chronically online. And your TikTok DMs can all reflect me chronically online. So I can't use that as an excuse. Thumbs up for those who can't
see. She's great. I'm going to say this a million more times, but everyone should follow her on TikTok. She's awesome. Very political in an awesome way. I like her a lot. Anyway, so I'll talk about her number one best-selling book that I didn't know about till about 4 years later. Red Queen. Here is the TLDR of what happens. Mare lives in a post-apocalyptic civil war happened, kind of America crumbled, and now it's all divided into small kingdoms, which sounds familiar, probably. Her kingdom is basically like part of Appalachia and southeast coastal-ish, and now I'm wondering if part of Massachusetts is also in her kingdom because of where she's from. So yeah, it sounds like some other heroine we know. So her world, Mare's world, is divided by blood. So those with red blood, they're the working class, salt of the earth types, you see? The elite silvers, they have silver blood, and they're like the one percenters, the royalty. They have godlike powers, and they are in control of everything. And they can do that because they have these powers, and they're like, shut up, reds, make our electricity. But anyway, so Mare's 17. She lives in the Stilts, which is an impoverished town. On stilts.
Wow.
It's really shocker. Creative. Yeah. And like 2 seconds into the book, she discovers she has a deadly ability. And we're like, what? No way. And the king and the queen, they don't want the drama. So they force Mare to pose as a lost silver noble. And they make her become betrothed to their younger son. And basically, the whole story is her kind of like, am I falling enough? I don't think I'm falling enough. Also, I hate the government. I'm going to overthrow it because I'm 17 and that's what 17-year-olds do. But yeah, she navigates betrayal and lies, and she must tread very carefully because one misstep can mean her death. And remember, not that Victoria would ever let you forget, anyone can betray anyone.
Ooh, that's not terrifying or anything.
Ooh.
She only said it. Ooh. And speaking of every other page.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, true. Literally. And on the back. Fair point. And on the front. So. If everyone just wants to hold up their book, they could just point to it about 4 times. Here. Don't say this is an audio medium, Cross. I know.
I have to bring this up. You made that joke like 3 times in the last episode that I just edited, and I had to cut 2 of them out because I was like, it's
no!
too many.
No,
that's funny. The comedy law of threes, Crossland.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard about
the second ones weren't as funny.
Funny things.
So I feel like speaking of betrayal can sometimes be like, oh no, she ate my cupcake and everything is sad and I'm very sad now. And then betrayal can also be dark and terrifying and very adult. I'm catching on to our YA as NA episode where we kind of discuss how this works and some of our favorite books that do that too. But I think there's something that wraps everything around everything, and that is the tropes. And I feel like we just have to dive a little deep into this and talk about the tropes. So
yeah, you get
let's
in there,
talk
girl.
About the tropes of
you
Red dive Queen. In there. Let's dive in Dope. There. Let's get in deep. Let's just cast that line. Just wrap them around.
Are you a Fisher girl now?
Yeah. No, I actually get bored really easily. So I tried one time and then I had to go home.
What is this?
And it kind of grosses me out that you have to like touch their weird sandy lips.
Sandy
like,
lips?
Get some chapstick for these. Yeah. Sandy like, lips? Get some chapstick for these fucking fishes. Like, I don't want to touch your...
Just like there are many fish in the sea, there are so many goddamn tropes in this motherfucking book.
Damn!
So let's go. How many can we think of? Tiff, you get to start. Go.
Dystopian society. Easy. Sorry, I also got really excited and I had to jump in there.
It's giving love triangle in 90% of this book.
Mm-hmm. Secret identity, which she was absolutely terrible at keeping a secret. So bad.
Oh my God.
So real.
So bad.
Okay, training. There was a training montage.
Love a montage.
Training montage. Training montage.
Yeah, and also, along with the training montage, there's the secret rebellion.
Don't forget betrayal, which we've already said, obviously.
Obviously.
And anyone can do it at any time.
Anybody can.
Like, there's royalty. Because it's YA. Why wouldn't there be royalty? Why wouldn't there be royalty? Of course
and
there's royalty.
And then Rags to Riches is in there.
Classic.
A little bit.
Hidden superpowers, baby. Like me, with my love for you.
Not so hidden.
Or not so hidden.
No, it's really not hidden. It's more like Shadow and Bone, where it's like, oh shit, I have a superpower. Cool.
Very convenient. There's some sibling rivalry, which at least in the first book, never comes up again.
Well, I want to tap into that.
One and done.
Which siblings? I gotta know.
We've got the undercover heroine. She's secret. She's keeping secrets from everybody. Ooh. Who can she trust?
Tucks the hair behind her ear.
Just don't know. And in line with the Rags to Riches Cinderella story, obviously.
Yeah. Starring Hilary Duff and Chad Michael Murray.
Oh, Chad Michael Murray. What my favorite.
Waiting for You is like waiting for rain in this drought. Useless.
And disappointing.
Laugh out loud.
All right. There's also some Forbidden Love, just like Hilary Duff.
Just like Chad Michael Murray.
Yeah, just like the football, the poor girl in the football, the quarterback. Big same. Honestly, this book is the same
as Dishes Girl.
It's Diner Girl.
Diner Girl. Yes.
I was like, okay. Why am I feeling so betrayed by this friend group right now for not knowing every answer?
Sorry.
Total left turn. It does have some really, really light political intrigue. Like so light. Like so extremely light. Like it's bare. She's barely there. But she's there. Sort of.
Political intrigue junior.
I'll take a
school edition.
Yeah.
I'm going to take a driving school left turn, make a full stop, make a nice blinker, check my blind spot, check my mirrors, because we're going childhood love interest turned rebel.
Ooh, yep.
Wait, I forgot. What? They weren't love interest. I have to disagree with this one.
I'm curious to hear your thoughts.
Fight.
It's implied. Arr.
We'll get there.
Oh, my turn. Well, okay. Anyway. Kids fighting each other.
I love babies fighting in my literature.
Fighting in the streets.
What about the wise mentor turned rebel that eventually dies, like in Aragon?
Mm-hmm. Or the
relatable.
What's his name from?
Most things
that was incredible
Snape,
audio.
Riveting.
We're just gonna ignore that.
I love it.
We've got Regicide, Throne of Glass called, kill all the dads, kill all the kings.
Kill
them all. And speaking of killing, there's also dead siblings.
You thought we were done, but it's also involving growing up poor.
Becoming the cover girl, the face of the rebellion, even though she's like 2 minutes into the rebellion and also has like no marketable skills, minus surprise superpowers.
Okay, also disagree with this one, but that's okay, we'll talk about it later. Overprotective queen mom, also, but also not overprotective. She's conniving and interesting and probably the best character in the story, in the series actually, but we'll go back to that.
Hot take.
I know. I just love that you're the only one who's read the rest of the series, so I feel like
I have to remember that you have all
the answers that we don't have, which is interesting, which is why I'm excited that like you're going to be able to push back on our thoughts from the first book because we're all newbies to it. So I'm here for it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Speaking of the mom, the last one I can think of is just dumb adults. Young adult books like love having dumb adult characters. Why are the adults so dumb? Except for, like Mary just said, the queen, Miss Queen Mom. She knows what's up. The rest of them are like, oh, 17, 16 year olds. We can trust them to do all of this. Go, and I'll believe everything they say at face value. So silly.
Yeah.
This trope and the way that it is executed in this book kind of makes me like a little bit mad. Like I like, historically, I have enjoyed the trope of grown-ups don't actually know what is best for children. Children have to figure that out themselves and work together and learn the value of community. For some reason in this book, it just kept making me mad. it just kept making me go like, no adult would act like this. No adult would be like this. And it, like, it's normally a trope that I don't hate, but I really didn't like it in this book. And I can't explain why.
Like Charlie Brown adults. They're just going, and it's like, what the fuck are you trying to do here? And it's like, sorry, I'll just keep going, but I'm just going to stop myself.
I also hope
see
we
myself
talk about,
out here.
Well, I think Tiff said it earlier, the mentor person that joins the rebellion, he also, his name's Julian. He's also pretty interesting. And I would say between the adults in the series, he's pretty intelligent, or at least turns out to be. In the rest of the series, and then also the evil queen.
I love it.
I love her. Hot. Who just is evil, but she's cool. So I like her. But which is interesting, because I don't typically like villains, but I think it's just because I was just like grasping for an interesting character. I was like, she's pretty cool. But anyway, so the tropes that we listed and kind of generated along the way, the friends we made along the way, they're really common in a lot of YA books, I should know. As I am the resident YA queen. But compared to new adult fantasy, would you say a lot, do you see these tropes in those as well? Or are they kind of exclusive to YA? What are your thoughts?
I mean, I think there's definitely crossover. I know I've read plenty of, I don't know about plenty, but love triangles, first in my mind. I feel like we see that a lot in YA, but I think it can be really interesting when it's in NA, when there's more adult themes. I don't know if I could give you an example of that. Maybe that's what I'm grasping for. So maybe my answer is actually love triangles tend to really only stay in YA, even though I think the answer is kiss everyone. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to read an adult version of that. Maybe
yeah,
that's just
I'm trying to think of one too.
Love triangles in especially YA books that are romance or YA television shows. So Vampire mm-hmm. Diaries, Summer I Turned Pretty, mm-hmm. One Tree mm-hmm. Hill, Gossip Girl. Mm-hmm. There's a little, I would say Gilmore Girls kind of counts as a love triangle because, in my opinion, Justin Dean are
to all
totally
the boys I've loved before.
To,
Jenny Han loves I love before. A love triangle.
I was going to say, a lot of it comes from, I think, in my opinion, YA romance or romance books, not necessarily YA fantasy books.
Yeah.
Weird. What do you think about YA versus NA tropes?
I feel like the other one that totally sticks out, and I think you guys probably get it too, is the training montage. / the secrets hidden superpower thing. I'm thinking of Shadow and Bone, Hunger Games, even Gallagher Girls by Ellie Carter, I think even counts because suddenly it's they suddenly discover that they're all super good at something and then they have this training montage. It's Shadow and
Akatar.
Bone.
Akatar is new adult. Absolutely does a lot of training montages.
I was gonna say Leigh Bardugo, she writes
Valkyries.
Them too. There's so many mm-hmm. opportunities where it's all of a sudden they go from I've never had a superpower before, I don't believe magic is real, to training in a courtyard and the sun is beating on them and they're wearing their leathers and these crazy boots. And it's every single book that's a YA fantasy, I discovered my superpower, has that scene. And I look forward to it every time. It's just so good. It's give me this in a TikTok, minute and a half video, short form, vertical. 9x16.
I mean, I think no matter how you look at it, Mare is, in my opinion, the most tropey character of all time. And that can be a win, that can be a loss. It is up to you, reader or listener,
there's
whoever you are.
There's something in there for anyone.
But truly, there's something in there for everyone. I was texting Kelsey, I think, as I was reading. And in the course of two pages, I think I hit at least three tropes every time I turned the page. You know, just a new trope mm-hmm. per paragraph. It was fun. But Mare Barrow, who is she? What do we think? She exists in the context of all in which she lives and what came before her. She is an amalgamation of every YA character to ever exist. What are your mm-hmm. thoughts?
I think a better question almost is who isn't Mare?
Mm.
Because
that's true.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God, she's so your name self-insert, but also she's got aspects and pieces of every other YA heroine that I can think of.
Mm-hmm. That's so, the YA and insert is so relatable.
Yeah. I was feeling really fiery when I was prepping for this episode. Because I for two reasons. One, I can't really remember a lot of characteristics around her besides the fact that she thieves and she's got electricity. And so maybe I need to be reminded, but my notes literally say Mare Barrow is more of a wet mop than Elaine. even with the thievery, which is really rough, dude. Like, I was clearly pissed after I read this, but I like don't remember why, because like Mare has like left the building from my brain.
She was just, that's part of why
she, because she,
yeah, probably,
in
yeah.
my opinion, and
she doesn't hold space.
This is not me saying anything against anyone in this chat who might love this book. Mare doesn't have any, she doesn't have a character. You couldn't make a character sheet about who Mare Barrow is because it changes every two pages. She's often extremely volatile and extremely emo, and then in the next page trying to be super consistent and calling out somebody else for being emo and inconsistent. And I think inconsistency is her only constant, which also, now that I'm saying it out loud, mm-hmm. she's 17, so maybe that is on brand and maybe that does make sense.
Yeah,
I don't know,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Victoria Everard, I think, has had a TikTok about that, like about how YA her book is, because she really did try to make it like for the kids, you know, and I have to wonder if she did a little too good of a job, because well, I agree. I mean, I reread it recently, and I hadn't reread it since, you know, the first time that I mentioned it. And she goes from being like coy, sensitive, shy, and kind of like, I don't know, I think I'm in love, to like, no, fuck this system, we're burning it down, to like, I have no idea what to do, to I have a plan. The plan goes horribly wrong. Like, she's so deeply ambiguous. And I've looked up fan art of her. It runs the gamut, because there's no, I mean, even down to her description, like, you just really can't picture her. But Addie,
I think
what were you
maybe
gonna
I was going to say, I think that's maybe why I just like never latched onto her. Like, I just didn't care. And that was really hard. Mm-hmm. And I think that like it's very hard when there's a character that you cannot picture in your brain, and you're not like standing waiting for your pasta to boil, like picturing Aelin from Throne of Glass, like doing her thing. It's like, that's what gets me to love books, is when I'm like sitting there doing other stuff and I'm like, oh my God, I cannot wait to know what happens to this character. At no point did I feel like that with Mare. And I think that's partially, I think I share this more in my rating, is like, I had a lot of other crap going on when I was reading this book, and so I think I didn't get to give it my full attention that I wanted to. But the other part of it is like, if it was a really good character and someone that I really was like, oh my God, I want to know more, I think it would have pulled me out of all the other crap that was happening and been like, all I want to know is about this character, you know? But I mean, the good thing is that she's got gray hair, not great hair.
Just like our other Electra girly, apparently.
She's gray hair.
She's got great in her hair, yeah.
Yeah, she's like,
I did not know that.
See, maybe it was only mentioned once. But it like came up.
That's the one single thing that I latched onto, and I was like, oh yeah, I remember this.
Oh, you know what? Later on in the series, she goes purple.
Don't spoil.
Why?
You're not going to
hold
on. You're not going to
read
it.
We're in the post-apocalypse, and she goes purple.
She's a little purple.
I love that for her, honestly.
This is like in Vampire Diaries when they show up in like heels and like their hair has been curled. I'm
you
like,
wanna
when
know
do you
how
have
she
time
found
to curl
time?
Your hair?
You read the fucking book, Addie.
No. This makes me like her more. Knowing that she took the time to dye her hair purple makes me like her more.
Yeah.
I love a girl that has priorities.
It's the revolution, and I gotta look hot.
Yeah.
Exactly.
She's like, I just learned how to do straightener curls.
Yeah.
That's so 17-year-old girl. Oh my God. Victoria, you're a genius. I take back any negative thing that I said or I'm going to say.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's brown hair with graying ends. Near the end of the series, her hair is dyed purple because that's the color of her lightning. Why the fuck would
it
be?
That's amazing.
Spoilers. What the hell?
I love that.
You're not going to read it. I know you're not. I'm the only bitch who's going to read all five of these books, and I do it with
there
pride.
There are five? I thought there were only three.
Mary, will you remind me, though, like, what else is she described as characteristics-wise? Because that's not, what is her hair other than that?
Right,
is it just...
Okay, I don't know, honestly, but there is a fan art that I really like, and in it, it's, like, beautiful, huge, brown, curly hair, and she's got, like, this, like, beautiful brown skin, and I did not read her as a character of color in it, but Victoria Aveyard says that's one of her favorite fan arts too, so I don't know if she's like racially ambiguous on purpose or what, but in that's one of my favorite fan arts, and I'd be happy to drop the link of it. Did you guys picture her a particular way? I mean, or was it just like this shadowy figure moving through the scenes when you were
she
reading?
Was just the, like Lindsay said, she exists in the context of all of which that came before her. She was just an amalgamation mm-hmm. of all YA heroines to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like
a little tiny brunette girl.
Yeah. Yeah. Or like a stock photo of a heroine.
Yeah.
Mary, this will be a question you know the answer to because you're a fellow Disney adult. What is, is it Violet is the sister in The Incredibles?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's who I was picturing.
Oh, a little more interesting. Emo than I go, but yeah, sure.
Like, definitely side part. Cool. I have a side part, but like side part, scrawny.
Well, this was 2015, really, so definitely dark. A side part.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, definitely a side part. Thank you.
Produced in 2015. But yeah. So that's Mare.
We've talked a lot about what she looks like and kind of like superficial things, but I think the other thing is that she's got a lot of baggage. Baggage.
Yeah, girl does. Yeah.
She's meant to be the financial leader of her family, and her three brothers are in the army, or one of them is like about to go to the army or like destined to be in the army. They all three are in the army. And I think she has a lot on her plate just even as a woman in her family. Like, let's talk a little bit about, I feel like we got to talk about her family and everything there too.
She's not meant to be the financial leader. The financial leader is meant to be her sister. Giza. Is it Jissa? Giza? Jissa?
Oh, Giza?
I don't know. Gissa? Giza. I'm going to call her Jizz.
Jizz. I call her Jezebel.
Giza makes more sense if we're being honest. Yeah. Giza is meant to be the financial leader. She is like, she does like needlework, and she's like one of the rare people in the Stilts to like have a job. But she carries like the weight of the financial burden. And I think like Mare is like, I still want to provide. So she's a little thief and runs around and steals shit. But like part of the book is that like Giza gets like saddled into a thieving plot with Mare, and she gets caught and she gets her hands broken. So she like can't do what her whole life she's been like destined to do. And she's like devastated by that. But we don't really get to, I don't know if we get more in later series, but like we just know like her entire life is ruined, and we get like two sentences on it.
Yeah, literally.
But Mare is like thrust into this new position of like, how is my family going to be cared for? Which is fascinating. So there's like a different level of pressure. But I do feel like in the beginning of the book, the pressure is pressure she puts on herself, and she chooses to thieve instead of like, she's a little street rascal.
She even talks about how she feels like she's not really anything, which is funny because as readers, we felt that way too. She's like, I don't really have any particular talent. I don't really have any particular interests. Yeah. All I know is I'm probably going to go die in the army, which is like, to be fair, if you know that that's how your life's going to end, would you really put a whole lot of stake into hopes, dreams, wishes, interests? I don't know. Yeah. It's interesting.
I really liked that she wasn't this, you know, sort of superhero from the beginning, right? Like, I think Suzanne Collins said it first in Hunger Games, where right from the outset, Katniss is super talented. And I love that. But then every single YA book after that also had to have this heroine that comes right in being super talented right off the bat. And that can be kind of annoying because it's harder to like put yourself in their shoes. And I'm like, I can't shoot a bow and arrow. I have no hand-eye coordination. I think it made it less believable later once she was trying to insert herself into this like global revolution, when it went from, I am talentless to, oh, actually, I can be the face of this revolution. And that I wish we had seen more of the gap on how she got there. I needed that to be a bit more compelling because I think that could have been a really, really cool character arc for her. But instead, it was sort of more of a no, just trust me, bro situation, which I have a really hard time wrapping my head around.
I agree. I think that it really, it's very teen, like capital T teen, because she goes from being like, I am just a cog in the system, to I can conquer the whole system, like very quickly. And that is so extremely like teenager taking their first civics class.
Derogatory.
Honestly, I was.
We've all been there. We've all been there.
Absolutely.
I'm like, global warming will be solved if I recycle more. Like, I'm changing the world. So
yeah. I think it's
developmentally appropriate. I guess.
Yeah. It's very developmentally appropriate. You're so right. I think that it's interesting how it's done in this, because I don't think we ever, like, we keep comparing it to the Hunger Games, and like that's just because I think that's the best example of how to do this kind of story. But really what I think we should maybe be comparing it more to is Divergent. And she kind of gives Triss more than Katniss, because I think
100%
from what I remember, Triss kind of just like very much kind of stumbles into being like the one. Like very like Matrix coded of like, she just magically kind of unlocks all these powers, and she's like, actually, I've known what to do the entire time. It doesn't matter that I'm 17. I've got it. And I feel like that's a little bit more similar to what we see here.
That's a good point.
I will say, though, I do hear the phrase, the face of the revolution, getting thrown around. Technically, I feel like in the first book, she doesn't necessarily perceive herself as that way. Like, she really does see Farley as like the one in charge, despite the fact that she doesn't really know shit about the Scarlet Guard. I think we all know that's where it's going, and that's why we kind of are alluding to that. But just for people who have not read the book, technically in the first book, that does not happen. Just to clarify.
No, that's a good point. She's not actually, but it like feels like
it's definitely going that direction. And we all know that's where it is. Yes. But just to clarify.
Well, they also sort of get at that with even the royals, though, right? Like the Silvers being like, you're going to be, we're going to put you on a pedestal to show all the Reds what's what. So I think it's more there than not, in my opinion, but maybe it gets ramped up later.
Sure. Yeah. That's true.
I think one thing that's, Tiff, you brought up a really good point that we should be probably be comparing this more to Divergent than the Hunger Games, but it's really easy to think of dystopian novels through, you know, the Hunger Games lens. And I think like one thing that I felt like this was maybe missing in the first book, and maybe it's not the time for it, is like, it sort of feels like where Mare's being set up to be a prop in the revolution, like in the same way that she's being a face in the revolution. And I think in Hunger Games trilogy, and it's in the later books, we get to realize that like being that prop is not actually fulfilling or like act like part of the movement. I mean, that's in the third book in the Hunger Games. So I don't know. Do we maybe get that later in books? I didn't feel like it's being set up in this book. Like, okay, good. Great.
I just felt like
good. Never mind then.
No, but not never mind though, because it was so clear that the author wanted to make this happen so bad and did absolutely nothing to execute on it. And one of the beautiful things that happens in the Hunger Games is you don't really realize that's what's happening until Katniss starts realizing it. Mm. And in here, it's like somebody setting up the T-ball stand for the 5-year-olds and like pointing at it and being like, hit right here, hit right here. This is where your bat goes. And all the little kids like hold up their thumbs. Yeah. It made it frustrating because it didn't make it feel natural. It felt like another trope to kind of shoehorn in there that wasn't executed well, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
Even if it does get executed later.
Right. Yeah, for sure. No, that's totally fair. And now I just want to talk about the Hunger Games and how well written it is.
I know.
But I think one
they
of the
have all these books have it. I'm like,
there you go. One of the biggest, you know, tropes that Mare has to navigate, that this whole book is about, and one that permeates YA and dystopian novels in general, is societal divisions. We love them. We hate them. They're interesting to read about. Everybody can identify with them in one way or another. What are your thoughts?
I've seen Hairspray.
My
thoughts.
Listen.
Go, Tiff.
I just need to get out there that, like, this book has every YA plot point and it's all about blood, but somehow this is not about vampires. I kept expecting vampires to come in somewhere, and the fact that there are no vampires, I'm so confusion. I understand that, like, Mary, you kind of know, like, can you explain like the reasoning behind the blood being different colors and stuff? Because I just like straight up was like, blood.
I mean,
it's
I
about
can
blood.
Give you the reason, but it's not a very good one.
So let's hear it.
Silvers are descendants of gods. And therefore, they're just like a different species altogether, I guess. And I guess silver blood's up there, red blood down here. Oh, I don't know. I guess in their world, like the Zeus people, you know, Zeus, whatever the name of their gods are, their blood is silver and the Silvers are descendants of them. So.
And the intro is, you know, Mare is red, but then finds out she's silver. Mm-hmm. But like, do we find out who her parents are? We don't need to talk about that. You don't need to answer.
Her parents. Yeah.
Is one of them
so she's just like a mutant? Is she like an X-Man?
No. So basically, Julian found... is this too much of a wormhole or can I explain this?
Well, can I say something quick?
I want to know.
Because it's...
I was getting... Yeah.
Mare's not just a one-off with this, right? We find out that her brother was also on that list and he also has like mixed blood of some kind. So it's not just like it was just her...
Julian's list.
My guess is, and I want to hear what Mary says because you've read more of it, but my guess is it's just like an evolutionary thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this actually is in book one, but Julian like writes in like the letter that he put in the back of the picture frame that he sends Mare with when they go down back to the Capitol, the list, and then also like that he, so there's, okay, so start over. When Reds
a
are born,
people.
They get their, when Reds are born, they get their blood sampled. And their blood goes into a blood bank. This is something I'll talk about later when we talk about Queen Badass, whatever her name is. And in that blood sample, the government has access to like everyone in the country who's red. And Julian being, Julian is the king's brother-in-law via first marriage, not second marriage. Being that he's part of the royal family. He has access to all of that. And he was doing some research and he was pulling samples of red blood in their blood bank and ran tests on it. I don't know what these tests are. I just imagine him with a little microscope going pew, pew, pew. But basically there is a mutation in their DNA or whatever, possibly that a silver was a part of their family, either in their lineage or that that's a mutation. That part is not explained in book one. That's his
hypothesis. They are the X-Men.
I was just gonna say, yeah. I don't remember reading
when I said mutant, it's because it's the X-Men, but YA fantasy.
Slay.
And okay, also, shit, did I read the right book?
To talk more about book two, but in book two, you meet some of them and they're so cute. And I love them.
Mary, I admire and appreciate your passion for this so much because I'm so glad. I feel like if it was just all of us being like, what the fuck happened? This episode would be so boring. So I'm so glad you're bringing
I read this book pre-book club era and I honestly, on reread, had similar thoughts to all of you guys. I was just lucky enough to be vibe reading the first time. You guys were there to take notes. It's different, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I have another question/comment that maybe you could answer, Mary, or maybe we can just chat about. But I know we talk about the class divide between reds and silvers. I felt like I was missing more background information about what really drives that massive amount of oppression. It's not just, the powerful people are the best. It's if you have red blood, you're just dirt and you're going to suffer. The class divide is so massive, honestly, relatable, Slay. Feel you there with the 1%, baby. Right. But anyway, I felt like I wanted more background on why the society existed that way. Because all we got was the blood and power. But I need more info.
Well, I think a lot of it is propaganda, right? So they need their working class to be so deeply oppressed and that oppression to be part of their culture, their religion, their norm. And you can't just have hey, you're going to be working class and we're going to pay you a little bit less just because we're a little more talented. You have to fully get in people's psyche, right, to convince them that they're nothing compared to you, right, in order for your working class to keep working for you and not start to fight back. So I feel like a lot of that is just a bunch of bullshit they made up to keep free labor.
Interesting. You know? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's just classic oppression. It's
I wanted
the history.
But we're going to make it real.
Yeah, the same reason why we oppress other people. But I think I wanted the history. I wanted to know what happened.
You know? So I also think it's true because it's kind of confusing. I mean, we know that this is America post some major event. And then silvers came down and we're this is stupid. We're taking over now.
Do we know that? So how do we know that? We don't
know that in the first book.
Oh, okay.
We don't. I don't think actually, I don't even know truly if I know that. But that's just kind of the pieces I put together over the course of it. Because it in my brain, at least,
it's in America.
Clearly,
you would assume it's some sort of post-apocalyptic.
What's
going on? America.
Mayor, literally.
That was funny.
Okay, honestly. Selection. But also America Singer flashback. In the fucking, So anyway, being that it's YA dystopian, you just kind of assume it's America post some big event, you know? Also, she does describe New York City in book one when they go with the subway tunnel thingy. So
I actually was remembering that. Yeah. But I guess my other thing too is just and I won't talk too long because I'm sure we all get it too, is I'd be so curious to know if we took that level of world building, fantasy, thick books that give you that whole extended oppression timeline and put it in here, if it would make it NA or if it would level it up one.
Probably.
Or would it make it so detailed that it'd be okay, I don't want to read this. Do people like it? And did it become as book talk famous as it did because people liked the lack
how
of
deeply
that?
Deeply YA it is.
I think that's a good point. Fair.
Did people love it because it didn't dive too deep into shit that's happening in real life? They wanted to just be okay, pop, I'm in this little other world, but.
I think that's fair. I mean, there's certainly a demographic that likes to suspend their disbelief and just sort of jump right into a story. There's plenty of people who say they skip over the world building elements of Sarah J. Maas's books or even whole fucking chapters of characters they don't like, which makes no sense to me, but I'm not in charge. You can do whatever you want. She says begrudgingly.
I'm not in charge.
What do we say at the end? Chase your bliss, baby baddies.
Chase your bliss.
Chase your bliss. Yeah. Unless your bliss is skipping chapters, then I don't chase that.
I was going to say, I don't skip paragraphs either.
But Addie, your point about, you know, would some chunky world building make this maybe an NA book makes me think of Red Rising, which basically this entire book is just Red Rising for babies. And it made me so mad.
Yes,
for babies.
It is Red Rising. Now
I
have for
to
babies.
Read I needed to know.
You why won't like it.
I needed to know the why and how we got there. Red Rising gives you the why and how you got there for the most part. But it makes it so thick and juicy. And then it makes the struggle later that follows feel
like I'm real thick and juicy.
Like something that I actually have stake in, as opposed to something that I'm just supposed to cheer for this main character because she's the main character. And the Red Rising parallels in this series were never ending. I am amazed there was not some sort of copyright claim. Not that it would have gone very far, but boy, howdy.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, wait. That's so really quick.
Yes, it is so funny.
Really fast side tangent about copyright claim is that Victoria Aveyard was actually in a copyright claim with, oh my God, why am I blanking on it now?
It's the Powerless book.
Powerless by Lauren Roberts. And that is a whole thing. It's like a whole TikTok go down
there's
the
like
rabbit
take
hole
for
thing.
Takes.
So like Powerless. Speaking of copyright, like it's kind of interesting because then you think of another popular book talk book that went absolutely bonkers viral and there's a whole copyright claim for it. And it's like,
Are you saying that if by association Powerless is copywriting Red Rising because of this chain effect?
Yeah, exactly.
Wait, so Tiff, do you think it is like Red Rising or it isn't like Red Rising? Just to clarify.
I think that it's like the divergentification of Red Rising. Like it's taking Red Rising and it's like squeezing out a bunch of the stuff that makes Red Rising interesting and compelling. Mm-hmm. And it's making it into like... I enjoy Red Rising. It's also such a boy book.
It's a boy book series.
Ew, it's like one of the boyest boy books. And like,
that's our bread and butter. That pays the bills.
For your boy podcast.
I'm not saying anything derogatory against Red Rising. I'm saying that it's a boy book.
Jumping in quick. Not to be the Mary here. It gets less boy book as you go along.
It does. But it is
not
still
to
boy.
Be the Mary here.
To be the Mary. Wait, it's still very boy. But like I think that Red Queen kind of takes that like story, and it is very much like it's kind of like Red Rising is like Dr. Pepper, and then Red Queen is like the like Whole Foods brand Zevia
Mr.
or whatever,
Pibb.
Like Dr.
Mr.
Bob.
Dr. Bob.
No, it's like LaCroix.
You got like orange juice.
A little touch of I was leaving LaCroix to be Powerless so that it like has like a little spectrum of like,
okay. That's fair.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so Mare. You know. So back to her blood, because this is a big part of it. The red blood that we've been talking about, the blood that's red. Yeah. Like we were saying earlier, we do find out towards the end of the book that she is not the only one with this mutation. It's supposed to be like a big, like, but I mean, was it?
Wait, Mary, what was that it's supposed to be like again? What was that? You just. Thanks, Layla. I forgot it the first time.
Yeah. So,
okay. Anyway. So now that you did that, I have to know. Yeah. When you were reading it the first time, did you find that it was predictable or were you like completely shocked?
That there was more people that were like her?
Yeah.
Or the other thing?
Like, was it like a fourth wing Rebecca Yarros moment where you were like, oh, she's a rebel. Okay. I've pictured this. I expected this. Or were you like, oh, shit, I had absolutely no idea that there's other people who are the genetic mutation.
When we know about a particular sibling, it kind of made me like, you know, assume that they would be involved in that. And I'll let Lindsay explain what I mean by that.
We really didn't need that much lead up. All it is that you know a dead brother exists when we've never met him and we keep talking about him. And he's going to show up in the last few pages. Let's.
Yeah.
We know.
Right.
Victoria, we know.
He's probably also going to be full of powers. So no, I was not surprised to answer your question.
I think the more we talk about this, the more I'm realizing the parallels between this and Fourth Wing. Like, it's literally
that's
Lightning Girl with dead brother who is part of the rebellion. Like, I don't know. I'm head scratching a little. That is just YA. So maybe, maybe I'm overthinking it. But I'm like,
but it's
more
also
than
Shadow
gray hair.
In every way. Yeah.
You guys, maybe we just read too much.
Yeah, that's true.
It's possible.
I don't have social life, so that would be
130 books, Kelsey, over there.
Have you ever considered that we are the problem?
Yeah, we 1,000.
Like, I don't know. Kind of reminds of these five other series I read last week.
Shut up. Who asked you?
You guys, that's just false. That's a false identity. That's not real. Everybody is perfect. Everybody's wonderful, except for Mare, but that's fine. But like, and she's trying everybody here, if you read, if
she's
you're social,
her best,
if you like
okay?
to eat, she's just trying her best. So am I. I woke up this morning, got out of bed. We're doing our best. She, however, Mare, as she has to pretend to be a silver as a false identity. I don't have a false identity. I'm my true self. It was really, really interesting for me to read. But does anybody else agree that like, I wish I had a ton more of her actually feeling conflicted about acting like someone else that had betrayed her whole community?
Yes. I don't know. No, because I guess I read it differently. I don't feel like she was like, oh, I like being silver. I don't think that really ever crossed her mind. She thought a lot about like her family and what was going on with them back at in the well-named Stilts and her sister and the guilt she felt about the situation she put her sister in leading up to it. And similar, like the whole reason really any of this happened was she was trying to keep her friend Killorn from dying in the army. That's how she ended up.
That's how you say his name?
As a noble. You could call him Corn if you want to.
Such Kale, a silly
Korn,
name.
I don't care. But just such Korn. A silly name. Such a silly name. But anyway, so I don't know that she ever, I don't personally think she ever had loyalty to the Silvers. She does, however, struggle with loyalty to Maven and Cal. But like, I don't, she never really enjoyed or I think had any love for like her big oppressive government. I never caught that vibe.
Mare's not a big government girly.
Not really. She's more of a libertarian, TBH.
I mean,
yeah. I'm gonna chime in on the loyalty to Maven and Calbit because in my own humble opinion,
who are the princes? By the way, I'm being horrible at reminding what people are. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's fine.
They're the princes.
But I don't think kissing two guys who are brothers within 36 hours counts as a struggle. Like
wait,
she flip flops.
Is this Miss
them?
Kiss Everybody? Who's saying
I was about to jump in
her?
And say Kelsey.
No, I
was just
going to
say
struggle.
Vampire Diaries.
No, I'm here for the kissing. To be clear, I just don't think it's a struggle if within less than 2 days you can decide to kiss both of them. That's maybe more what I'm getting at.
This was another place where it felt more Red Rising, and I would want more world building again because I just wish that we got to see more of Mare's inner world building, right? More of her being conflicted, more of her trying to process as opposed to just kind of being emo about it. Mare did not come off as very self-aware to me, and it felt a bit boring to just have her be upset all the time instead of working through and processing her feelings. It made me really frustrated at least. But again, she's 17, and were any of us able to do that at 17? Right. I don't think so. Teenagers, man.
Mare.
It's like super similar fair. Bone to pick with Violet, honestly. Like, to be honest, I think sometimes I feel the way about Violet the way that I should have been feeling about Mare, but I was such a vibe with Mare. So I hold them, I should hold them equally accountable.
I get
it's
it.
On me. I'm the problem.
not to keep bringing it back to Katniss, but I do think that this kind of is, can be attributed kind of to like the idea of a rebellion led, quote unquote, by teens. Because I think that one of the things that's so compelling about Katniss is that you do, like, you're in her head the whole time and you're, like, understanding the way that she is, like, reckoning with, like, working through her feelings about both the Capitol and the people that she likes from the Capitol. And then also, like, how unjustly even the people in the Capitol have been treated in addition to the people who are also from District 12 have been treated. And I think that that is really interesting to watch. And I think that kind of leads me into, like, I don't, like, the methods and the motivations of, like, is it the Scarlet Guard that is the rebellion in this?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. I had to think for a second.
Kind of, yeah. I think, like, her, like, Mare processing through, like, how she feels about the Scarlet Guard feels like a very, like, surface level kind of similar to how Katniss feels about, like, once she finds out, like, what Gale and Beatty are doing. I just reread these in November for Nostalgia November, so I know so much about the Hunger Games right now. But when she finds out, like, what the Rebels are doing and, like, figuring out whether or not she agrees with what they're doing, I think that that is an interesting, like, comparison that I think is just part of a rebellion being led by teens.
Yeah. So many feelings.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, we have to shout out to our main girl, Farley. She is not the leader of the Scarlet Guard. She's just Mayor's contact to the Scarlet Guard. She's
middle 22, management.
So she's like up there. She's like up there she's in 22. Age, you know, for this teenage rebellion. Ooh, for this teenage rebellion. She's a senior citizen. Yeah. No, and Tiff, thank you for pointing that out, because I think that's something that's really interesting that happens later in the series, is both Farley and Mayor honestly kind of like noticing that the rebellion they're a part of isn't necessarily everything they thought it would be, and then having to figure out their own morals alongside that. So things that could have made book one better. But
I do think
go ahead.
No, just I was going to agree with you and say that I think that that's one of the beautiful things about this being written the way that it is that mm-hmm. it's really good for teens to learn that, mm-hmm. that like even the things that you want to fight for are never going to be perfect. There is no perfect side. There's a best side, but there's not a perfect one.
Mm-hmm. And that everything deserves criticism.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. And praise. Especially Red Queen.
Snaps.
Especially Red Queen.
Okay, I'm gonna do a sexy little can opener here. Here's some ASMR for you. Oh, yeah.
Oh,
rip it, like, rip it, baby.
Yeah. That was actually really hot. I'm really into that.
I feel so hot. That's like someone just burped me. Speaking of hot, like,
Farley is hot, I think. I imagine Brienne of Tarth when I read Farley. Ooh. Just like tall, big, chopped blonde hair.
And no then idea she who that kind is. Of
reemerges.
Game of Thrones?
In middle of the book with a big scar down her face, which is kind of hot and sexy too. I don't know. She's great. I like her a lot. She just seems like she can provide. So I admire her.
Yeah. That's funny. I like the Brienne angle. I did not picture her like that, but I also couldn't tell you how I did picture her. I don't know, man. Farley was a little bit flat for me. Fine. Like, why and how was she in charge? She was not in charge of the whole thing, but she was definitely like middle management. You know, how did she get mm-hmm. a manager role? What is her story? Not that we like need the whole world building, but you know, if I was not Violet, what's this girl's name? Mayor. And this woman just like appeared, no. I'd be like, why should I listen to you?
Mm-hmm. I wonder if what we're learning about this is so narrow because we are only seeing it through Mare's vision and only through her perspective. And like, maybe we don't get the full picture of the movement or like the context of the background because Mare doesn't. And like, I don't know, Mary, tell me if that's true or not.
No, I think that's totally valid. And I'll get onto that. I will talk more about that as well.
I would love to think that Victoria Aveyard like chose to do some really cool writing that like reflected on the egocentric nature of the teenager, like not absorbing anything around them. But it's so hard for me to like give it that generous of a read.
I know.
No, but you're right. But it's true, right? I mean, and we get that with like Feyre in ACOTAR as well, where we're only seeing her side of things. We're not seeing anybody else's. And anytime this was written in first person, right? Am I remembering right?
Yes.
Yeah. And anytime you're reading or writing something in first person, you're really only getting that person's inner dialogue and that person's view of the world. So I think that's always really important to think about when you're reading first-person writing, especially. So I think there's definitely merit there. I also just didn't totally understand as
merit.
Haha. I also didn't totally understand as far as Farley went, like, you know, why was she trying to recruit children? Why was she not trying to recruit like business people or people really high up in the Silver Society or like people who like worked in the Silver Society? Just felt a little like too convenient.
I mean,
in the way that YA does. Go ahead.
Yeah, I guess like with who she's recruiting with the Reds, it's like everyone who's over 18 is dying in the war. Like the only people who are around,
or they have jobs,
like who aren't. Yeah, that is fair. Yeah,
because the only people that go to war is if you don't get a job. Which, not that that's great, but
which is a lot.
Not all of them.
Which is a lot of people.
No, you're right. Yeah, it's like what are the people with jobs doing? No, I know, yeah.
Or why doesn't she...
To be honest, I wondered that too.
Why doesn't she try to recruit people who are Reds who are in the army to do something like from within the army? You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
And why the 17-year-olds?
That seems logical,
why
though.
Not the 20-year-olds, 25-year-olds, people who have a little bit of a resume, people who've already built up their portfolio of trust with the Silvers?
They've got a LinkedIn. Yeah.
Yeah. It also is so funny to me that... What is Mayor's like childhood friend's name?
Killorn.
Killorn, that's right. What a Killorn. Fucking silly name. That Killorn, like, allegedly joined the rebellion and was, like, high enough up to be working closely with Farley, like, 2 minutes ago, even though he, like, had just left. I don't know. That
Gail's involvement in Hunger Games was like more realistic, and that was already really pushing it. I don't know. And it also, sorry, not to just keep hating on Farley. These are just my rambling thoughts. She just gave up so much intel to this, like, 16-year-old that she just met,
like right away,
who was surrounded by silvers. And when the prince showed up, she was like, oh, bet the prince wants to be involved. Here's our plan. Like, girl, you got to do some due diligence.
Yeah. Crazy. It's very 22-year-old girl YA, to be man. Like, to be like, I trust this young girl with everything that I know ever.
Yep.
Can I be more?
But maybe not like a teen.
What info did she really? Besides, like, what? I mean, I guess I'm kind of curious about specifics here with the intel she gave up.
Well, first off, the fact that she exists to the prince and like where they're meeting and what their plans are for, like
the prince for sure. Yeah.
You know, bombing the ball or whatever they had. It just made no sense to me that she was talking to a random teenager and then another random teenager who is also royalty and just said, okay, great, be involved, and didn't give them like a little baby mission to even prove that they were competent.
Right. No, that's fair. I think that speaks to, well, I feel like it's relevant now.
Okay, so Mary, I think where you're going with all of this is that we need to talk about the villain of Red Queen. We need to talk about the queen herself.
We do.
And I just want everything. Like, I want to know everything. And I, you know, I love the villain. But let's just dive deep into the villain and talk a little bit about why she is so important to this series.
That's such a good idea. What the fuck is her name? Why can't I remember?
Alara. Her name is Alara.
Yeah.
I was like, just like,
I was waiting for your passion to come and be like, oh my God, I need to talk about Queen Alara because she's.
No, I do. I do. This. And if you don't mind, I'll just start. This is her story. She is the main character. This is her book. And I have my notes. Literally, you guys have all been bringing it to the point. Mare's kind of fucking dumb. She's 17. She's really sloppy at being a silver. She doesn't cover her tracks. She's always torn between the two brothers. She talks way too openly about the what's the, I was about to call it Red Rising, the Scarlet Guard. Like, she's horrible at being a spy. She's horrible at being a rebel. She's not doing great at being a silver. She should be dead. But she's not, because the queen needs her to live to see through this plan that she has. So every single time Mare makes a mistake, she's covering her tracks. And she has like her big evil monologue towards the end of the story, like every evil villain person does. And you're like, damn, girl, she was like 20 steps ahead the whole freaking time. And I just think it's iconic. And she is take no prisoners. She wanted to do, she would do anything to be in control of that country, even if she can't do it directly herself, but putting her son in the throne close enough.
Truly, she's just truly giving Cersei. Like, she loves her kids. She will do anything to keep her kid alive and well at her own risk.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, but. Yes, and. Sorry. Yes, and I think she is very hungry for power, but she herself cannot be king. Right?
So that's literally Cersei's whole thing.
Yes, but I don't think her biggest motivation though is that she loves Maven. She's not.
That's not Cersei's either, in my opinion.
Maybe, but I guess I have not read the books. I've only seen the TV show, and she's like pretty loving and doting on her children despite their flaws. I would not say that Queen Alara.
You think she loves power more than she loves her kids?
I do. Her kid, singular.
That's right.
Yeah.
Because for those who don't know, she is the king's second wife. Cal's mother mysteriously passed away when Cal was born because Queen Alara killed her. So,
I think just quick clarification as well. Cersei is from Game of Thrones. For those who don't know, it's not Cersei, C-I-R-C-E. I realized that as someone who didn't know who we were talking about, I was like, what is that?
For anyone who's not Addie and was alive between 2010 and 2016, Game of Thrones was a hit television TV show and a great series of books written by George R.R. Martin.
I was going to say, we'll talk about it later because I don't want to get on a tangent, but I'm too scared to read Game of Thrones and or watch it because I get nightmares. Thank you very much. Good night.
That's totally fair. It's really spooky.
Okay.
No, but so anyway, in summation, I think a lot of my issues with Mare that I similarly had with you guys and like kind of her stupidity and her being 17, to me, it's just because it was Agatha all along. It was always the queen. Like, actually pulling the strings of Mare the whole time. thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
I was just going to ask, like, how did you feel about her? I mean, I know you liked her, but I'd be curious, like, Kelsey, Lindsay, Tiff. I mean, obviously, Mary, I know you loved her. But, like, those of us who haven't read it before, what do you guys think?
I want more from her. Like, I want, like, more villainous. Like, I think that I want her to be more evil. Like, I want her to be more evil. That's my perspective. I think she's got a lot of potential as an interesting villain. I just want her to be more villain. You know what I
mean?
Yeah,
I think I agreed with you, Tiff, in a lot of ways. Like, I appreciate that she's playing the long con, but I want to know what else she's, like, what else is up her sleeve. You know, I'm, like, I'm intrigued. But I will say, like, the whole evil stepmommy to Cal thing was, like, kind of eye-rolly. Like, I couldn't really, like, mm-hmm. I was less interested or intrigued by that.
Cal was the Cinderella in the Cinderella story.
Yeah, literally. Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, so I think that she's intriguing, and it does lead to the way that she kind of pulls Maven along with her, which I do think kind of segues into why we're all here. Romance.
Ooh. The love triangle. Oh, yeah. That's the part that I laughed the most at, but also enjoyed the most. Because, you know, my comments were already made known about the whole kissing both of them within 36 hours, which I love. We love a girl who knows what she wants, even though she doesn't know what she wants. But the answer is just to kiss both of them, like, slay girl. But basically, like, what? More importantly, let's take a step back and talk about these two
brothers.
She just
likes kissing.
She just likes to kiss. Who's getting the kiss doesn't matter. But these two boys, Cal and Maven, the brothers, they're really different. We sort of already talked about it. Cal is the king to be. He's the golden boy. He's everyone's kind of, like, favorite. Everyone looks to him. His dead mommy was, like, I think more beloved as a queen figure than mm-hmm. Alara is. And then on the opposite side of that, we have Maven, who's kind of like the looked over younger brother. He's picked on a little bit. Like, Cal comes in and saves the day often and, like, shows up for his brother, but you can see how that would, like, make someone resent you at the same time. So, like, Maven and Cal's relationship's really interesting, but we don't actually get to learn more about it until Maven's ruse is, like, uncovered at the end of the book. But I'm curious to know, let's just start off with, how do we feel about both of Mare's interests? What are our thoughts about Cal and Maven?
I think you brought up the exact summary of my thoughts on Cal and, what is his name?
Maven.
Maven. That's right. Which is so close to Mare. Which is why my brain is confused.
Not wrong.
You brought up my thoughts already exactly, which is she kisses one of them. I don't remember which. And then a couple days later, she kisses, not even a couple days, like hours later, she kisses the other one. And she's like, huh, what am I going to do? The flirting wasn't there for me. I liked that he helped teach her to dance, but it wasn't super compelling. They kiss. This is Cal. I'm remembering now. This is Cal. And then 3 days later, she kisses the other one, Maven. And she just, like, doesn't care. And I think, Kelsey, you said this earlier, or maybe it was Tiff, but mm-hmm. like, I wanted there to either be some conflict, or I literally wanted her to say, actually, I don't care. But there was nothing. Yes, give us nothing, girl. She just writes some things like, I was confused or I was mad, instead of really, like, getting us into the character's head and thinking through what it would be like to be 17 and have kissed somebody and then kiss somebody a couple hours later. And I wish that we had it. It was a bummer. Kind of a pity.
No, totally. I feel like I couldn't believe, like you, Lindsay, couldn't believe the relationship with either of them because it happened so fast and without any depth. She, like, literally tells Maven that she loves him at the end of the book, which I was like, why?
Yeah.
Like, I was like, wait,
for what?
Wait, what? Where?
How did we get there?
And then I know, I'm like, you talked twice, like, huh? And then Cal is truly almost ready to, like, give it all up for Mare at the end. Like, he's gonna forsake his throne for her almost, because he says he loves her, but also, what? How? Why? Like, I think that, I don't know if it's, like, more bad than normal, or if, like, it's kind of the classic YA trope of, like, insta-love. I mean, I can say, like, why do you love each other for a lot of YA books? But this felt exceptionally, like, shallow, and I couldn't subscribe to either relationship.
I do not like or subscribe to this relationship. No, I totally agree. I felt very, like, oh, here is the boy, therefore there is love. And I need some, like, PhD candidate to do their dissertation on, like, oh,
My PhD seeking husband was just telling me about this analysis that you can use that I cannot remember the name of to analyze things like books and themes within books. And so we need some data. We need someone to get their PhD in literature, but specifically YA. And then maybe we'll have an answer. So Mary, go get your doctorate. That's that's how we're going to resolve this.
To be honest, is that a thing? Can you get a doctorate in YA? Can I be Dr. Mary?
Why not? Yes.
No, but I think great. Like our whole point is that she didn't have any internal conflict or even like self-aware. Holy shit. I just kissed two brothers in 24 hours or 48 hours. Like never once was she like, oh, my God, wait a minute. And I think like that was the one moment that I needed was like her to be like, oh, God, what did I just do? And like other shows with love triangles or movies or books, I feel like they do have that moment, except for obviously Belly from Summer I Turned Pretty, who I have feelings about. But like, I think I would love to have seen her in two sentences, one sentence, just be like, holy shit, what did I just do? Or like, wait a minute, yeah, where did I just go? Because I think, I don't know, it was like, I wish she would have just had one moment of actual feelings of said, what? Like, I just did this. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I do think it's very, like, I, you know, I'm going to continue to give, I'm going to over give credit and say, like, it's very teen to just be like, there are these two hot guys and I want to kiss both of them. And I did. No thoughts, just vibes. Yep, how many cute boys can I kiss while I'm at the president's house? You know?
Yeah. Amen to that, sister. Like, at least time passes between some of those. And Red Queen, she's like, oh, I just kiss this one. My lips are still warm. Let me just go and rub it. Like,
she respectfully,
if they had STDs or anything that was on their lips, like, they'd be passing them.
Between brothers. Between
imagine.
I will say.
Yeah, Mary, let's hear it.
My turn. I do think that there is an interesting shift, though. She kisses Cal. The bombing happens. They torture the people that they capture.
Yes.
And pretty much after that, she's completely turned off by him. Like, she sees him as a whiny baby who only, like, cares about his throne, his soldiers, his toys. And yes, so she does, you know, just basically she more or less chooses Maven, right? Because she sees Cal for being, like, part of the system. He's not going to change. She's like, I'm done with you. You wooed me, but I see right through your nonsense, more or less. And then decides to go, like, basically be with Maven. And that basically, that I think that in my brain, that happens once she realizes that he kind of took pleasure in some way of like torturing Killorn post the bombing of the ballroom. But so I guess for me, that shift was important because it does set up the rest of the story when she attempts to, but does a horrible job trying to manipulate Cal into like stepping aside, giving up his throne and like giving it over to the Reds. Right. But meanwhile, she's actually being manipulated by Maven to do that, who is being manipulated by the Queen to do that. So it runs pretty deep. Especially with Maven going like, he's always going to choose you. Like, pick me. Like, he wants you, but I want you too. And he'll always choose you. Blah, blah, blah. Which is such a bullshit line that he fed her. And that's even crazier to me is that she fell for it. Because he gave Cal gave her no fucking reason to make her ever assume he would step aside just for her and give up everything that he's benefited from his entire life. Mm-hmm. So that really pissed me off about Mare in that moment, that she was like, yeah, Maven, you're right. He does love me. Like, when did he ever make that clear? But again, she's 17, so I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. I want to talk about Maven's betrayal a little bit more. Because it's a key turning point.
Anyone can betray anyone.
Yes. Which, with all that warning, maybe this question is a little silly, but did you anticipate it happening? Did you see that coming from a mile away, or was it a surprise?
Yes.
Let's hear it, Lindsay.
Plot twist of all time. You meet a prince and he's like, hey girl, want to do a rebellion against my whole family and my giant castle? And she's like, yeah, let's do it. And there's no pushback or resistance from him, and all of their hijinks goes well, and the queen never interrogates her like meaningfully or super deeply, despite knowing she's a red and like some thinly veiled threats. Yes, of course. And he keeps being like, anyone can betray you, as they're like necking. Yes, he's going to betray you, girl. Like,
what you literally just described is push hair behind the ear, her orbs, hair in a messy bun, and Harry Styles shows up at her door. Wattpad, no, anybody?
And your parents have sold you to One Direction? Yes, yes. Like,
this is giving the a Wattpad in every moment. There's literally no internal conflict. Like, you're getting adopted by a freaking boy band member and you're like, okay, I'll go with him. Like, no problem. Like, this fine. I'll just kiss two boys. Fine. No problem.
Huh? I'm still stuck on orb hair.
Oh, no, so her orbs.
And her hair. Her messy bun hair. It's like a fan fiction thing that
every fanfic, especially fanfics about One Direction, there's like talk about eyes, but you don't call them eyes. You call them
orbs.
Your orbs. His blue orbs stared into me. Like,
okay.
It's a.
Got it.
Addie and I are too deep in the deep take of fanfiction Direction.
I understand. I didn't understand the comma between orbs and hair and how it connected to.
Doesn't Cross have a joke about visual audio medium or something here that he's supposed to add in? But no, I read after as it came out on Wattpad, so I'm deep.
You know it, girl. You know
I know it. But no, it's like messy bun, hair behind the ear, like, oh my gosh, he loves me. What? Like, there's no internal conflict. She had no internal conflict. Not once did she have the holy shit moment that I had been looking for in all of Fourth Wing. Never once was she like, oh my God, what the hell is happening? She just accepted it and like moved on and was like, okay, this is my duty. This is what I'm doing. I was like, fine with it. At least Katniss Hunger Games was like, oh God, what do I have to handle now?
Katniss is only conflict, to be fair. Is she ever sure?
That's fair.
I relate to that. Thank
so
you.
Real.
She's like, so wait, real. Hold on a minute. She's never been sure of a decision in her life. No, that's not true either.
That was that about me?
No.
It's okay.
Absolutely not. Again, I'd like to remind the audience, I was a vibe reader. I was shocked. I was like, wait, what?
See,
I'm sorry about that.
No, I'm with you, Mary. But it wasn't that I was like shocked because I didn't expect it. Like Lindsay called out, like, it's a common plot practice. Like, obviously it's going to happen. But for me, I was like, I missed. It felt so out of left field because it wasn't like set up in a way. Like, it also wasn't like, just kidding, I've been lying the whole time. And maybe I should have known better, but it didn't feel like a plot twist in a way that was like, oh my God, now that I look back, I see all the signs. I'm like, I look back and it's like the signs are too much of the like obvious T-ball setup that I didn't respect them as
it's
signs.
Not satisfying.
If that makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. So Mary, I'm like, I was shocked. I was actually shocked. So I feel you.
Shocked and appalled, but not in the normal sense of the phrase.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Well, Maven is he's an interesting guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, speaking about that, like, what do we think motivates him? I mean, this entire book, he's lying. He's manipulating Mare by the influence of his mother, which we've talked about. We believe for a portion of it that he wants to help the Reds, only to find out that he's playing the long con. Why is he doing that? And what's his motivation?
I think he's got a little wiener.
That's it. I think you're right. I think you're totally right.
I don't know why that just caught me so off guard.
I mean, because you're not wrong. That's why.
Cross is like giggling like a child right now. Like,
I mean, again, his mom was feeding him narratives his whole life that he wasn't good enough, that his older brother was always the favorite, that they were the second family but not the favorite family. He was never going to be good enough and he had no power. So the only way to be worth something was to be his dad's favorite, the king, and the most powerful.
Yep.
And that's it. And I think he loves his brother in some weird way, and that does come up later in the series. But obviously not enough. So,
yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, I think that it is. This is another thing that I wish would have been leaned into harder. Really, I just wish that all of the like negative parts of this book were like cranked up, because I think that it could have been really interesting to have him go even more like hashtag nice guy thing and like lean harder into the like sleaze and made it like more sinister and weird and gross and given him more like. I know he's like talking about like the like you shouldn't have to see this and anybody can betray you and whatever, but I think that they should have gone harder into the nice guy thing, because I think that would have made him like
he's like
a more sinister,
like, made
character.
It more incel-y.
Well, he's like super serial
more incel-y.
He's
yeah.
super serial killer-y, incel. In my opinion. Well, and like spoilers for next book, you're not going to read it. He locks her in a cage and then he like continues to hit on her.
See?
No.
Incel.
What?
Yeah.
Incel.
No, it's literally called, hold on.
Now I kind of want to read it.
King's Cage is what it's called.
King's Cage is the book?
Yeah. Is it trauma? She's like good trauma? Like hot trauma?
No.
No, it's Maven. He's got a tiny peen. It's not good trauma.
Maven with a tiny peen.
Okay, well.
That's the tagline.
from the vision of like this incel-ish Maven, like, is he actually just like a mega racist? Does he hate the Reds? Like, what's up with him? What's his deal?
I don't know that he hates the Reds. I just think it's a system that works for him. So he's like, yeah, that'll work.
Yeah, I don't really think he
cares.
I don't think he cares either. I think he just wants to be in charge and he's kind of a mama's boy.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Like, mommy told him he should be king, and so he's like, I'm gonna be king.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like most royalty.
Yeah, that's fair.
Right.
That's super fair. Totally.
Yeah, so I don't know. Like, he's not that complex of a character. Because he just feels like he doesn't have what he's supposed to have, and he never actually feels fulfilled. Because it's all based off of what he's been told he doesn't have his whole life by his mom. So I don't think he's that interesting. His mother, however, very interesting. I would like to know more about her. If we feel like we've kind of wrapped up Maven and the fact that he's like just kind of stupid, underwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
What else do you have for me? What else did you hate about the book? Let's hear it. I'm all lubed up.
Loose cannon.
Thank you, Mary.
I won't interrupt you. Go ahead.
I
will hold space for this.
The further that I get from it, the more I dislike my time with Fourth Wing. And the amount of times that I had the thought of, wow, this is giving Violet, even with the gray hair. Like, it frustrated me how much Violet got, like, magically got over everything and, like, magically, like, understood all of these different systems. And, like, sure, there's, like, the training montage where they're at the college or whatever, but, like, barely. And, like, the, like, random superpowers thing really, like, gave Violet of, like, oh, my God, not only are you super and special, you're double super and special. And that frustrated me.
I did, like... Her Victoria Everett's like really YA way of hinting the first 30 pages that Mayor had electricity powers. Like every time she walked into a building or whatever, it was like the crackle of the electricity like hurt her head. And it was, as a 17-year-old also reading it, you're like, I wonder why.
No, I missed that. You know? I missed that. That went completely over my head. Yeah.
Oh, that's
that was
okay,
so shadow and bone coded.
And I didn't know Maven was going to, be a dick. So we all have
that. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I felt like... I can't remember if the first time I read it I caught the electricity, but the second time when I was doing my reread, I was like, oh my God, this is obvious. But I probably missed it the first time.
I think that was what immediately I was like, oh, Shadow and Bone, Leigh Bardugo. I just watched the series on Netflix. I was like, there we go. Because the same thing happened to her, and that's another YA series. And then I was like, wait a minute, which was written first? But like immediately it was like, oh, wait a minute, she has a hidden power.
One thing that annoyed me is that like the trope, she basically learned to use her powers in 2 minutes. It didn't take long. All of a sudden, she just had it figured out. Like, in theory, I want more training montages, but I think what I really just want is like the training montage in Throne of Glass, which means I just really want more people punching Roan in the face because I'm really into that. So
I'll take care of them.
You want training montages with like a little bit of sexual tension.
Yeah. Yes, thank you, Lizzie. Yes.
Her and Maven having one would have been really interesting to me. Yes. Like, because he like had to fight her, but then have to like hide the fact that he like didn't really care about her, but had to act like he did. Like, that would have been hot.
Yeah.
That would have been nuts. Yeah.
Well, you know what?
Victoria, take
if
notes.
The timeline of this book was a little longer, maybe we could have had a freaking training montage. Because what was the timeline?
Retweet.
Seriously. How long is this book?
Okay.
I think it's like a week.
So
wait,
I looked
it's
it up.
Shorter than Crescent City?
No. I it feels like it. I did look it up. It is actually 3 months, but the passage of time is really unclear. I had to like dig into the Wikipedia because so much happens in that 1 week, like their kiss and like the bombing and like every like all of that happens in like a week, but there's supposedly a lot of other passage of time like before that and a little bit after. But I genuinely had to look at a timeline, and there is one on the Red Queen Wikipedia page. And 3 months is still like 3 months is still short, and it's not clear where the 3 months all go. So a lot of the time is in the beginning.
The big to-dos happen within a week.
like so little time.
That's hilarious.
That's insane.
It's incredible.
Oh my gosh. So just to confirm, some people have a menstrual cycle longer than the big to-dos in this book. Just to put it into context.
For a book about blood, that is a great tie-in, Addie.
Thank you.
But I love not that. Speaking blood of, in the speaking way that I want queens. It to be about blood.
No vampires,
I was like, what else lasts a week? And I was like, well, not Cal or Maven, but some people's menstrual cycles. Or periods, as they're colloquially called.
All right, what else? What else? Give me all you got. Here, let's hear it.
So, I know we keep talking about Hunger Games, but I have one more like hyper specific Hunger Games thing that really bothered me that I did keep talking to my husband about. Because, okay, the fact that she lives in the stilts, the stilts, it's so similar to the seam. It made me feel like I was going insane. And I could have, like, it got switched up in my brain at one point. I was like, oh, yeah, she lives in the seam. Wait, no, she doesn't. She lives on the stilts. I feel like all of the names of things are so similar to other things that I like better. And they're also more confusing in so many ways.
Teemu Hunger Games.
Mm-hmm. Teemu Hunger Games. Oh, my God.
No, but you're so right. You're so right. Like, why are these names so bad? Mare Barrow is the worst name I have ever heard.
It's so
Mare
bad.
Barrow?
It's giving wheelbarrow.
Is it supposed to be like bone marrow?
Calorn?
Wait, because that's where blood is created, like blood cells are made in the bone marrow?
I don't care.
Wait.
It's bad.
Okay, but seriously, yeah.
I don't care. Imagine, I just don't like it.
Imagine pushing your child out of your womb. You are like absolutely dying because you just did all of that.
No, I've already
named
checked
them
out.
Maven.
Or Calorn.
No.
Like cow.
Calorn. Why are we
like your child comes out, you're like, ooh, baby, introducing my child Cal.
And even worse, his name is Tiberius. His first name is Tiberius.
I forgot about
whose first name?
Cal.
Like, ooh, baby Tiberius. Please.
Cal's his Tiberius Calor. They call him Cal. His name's Tiberius.
That's so silly.
What a loser. I know.
I don't know why, but Tiberius sounds like some sort of illness. Like, oh, I'm so sorry to tell you, you have the Buthrus Tiberius. Like,
instead of Cal, he should have gone
like
with
tuberculosis.
Tib. It does. Yeah, thank it does. You get
tib,
me.
Tuberculosis like, and tib. Bone marrow.
Tib and bone marrow. Yeah.
See, yeah, I think that some of those things, like Tiberius, is clearly like a reference, but I think that some of the like politics in this are almost like condescendingly simplistic. Like, it's really, really obvious.
The nice word for that is accessible, Tiff.
Accessible, but like to an almost insulting degree. Like, I think that there is a difference between being accessible and being insulting.
Hey, some of us are dumb, Tiff. Come on.
Some of us are 16, so.
Okay.
No, yeah. No. Keep going. So. I'm sorry.
No, but you're right.
Cowboy romance.
Yanking the chain. Yanking it.
No. I just think that like it's super obvious who's racist and who's not racist, you know?
Yeah.
And even though the racist ones have superpower, and the racist ones have superpowers, and the superpowers are used for evil. And so I think that it's very, very simplistic in its morality and politics.
Yeah, that's so fair. I felt that way, too. It where other books kind of blur that line between good and bad and subvert those roles. This one just really didn't. And I'm curious, Mary, if that happens later down the line in other books in the way that the Hunger Games does, because Hunger Games goes kind of heavy at the beginning, like capital bad. Poor people good. Let's explore that further. But it was very ham-fisted. Yes. And I wish it was a bit more subtle.
No, I completely agree. And yeah, in the later on in the series, and I'm not saying it's necessarily done well. I'd actually have to hear you guys talk about it to decide if it's done well or not. But they do talk about, well, Mare kind of has to do her own diversion from the rebellion in the same way that Katniss did, just because it's not always so black and white as it is in the first book. So,
yeah. What I'm basically hearing, in summation, and overall, I'm hearing, should this YA book be considered NA?
Or would it be better NA? I think it's the question.
Or would it be better as NA where it could dive deeper into this?
I think it should stay young adult, but Victoria should try to do less. I think if she took out half the tropes and tried to make it less of like a political intrigue story, this could have been a really wonderful YA book.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think these complicated, like, I think the amount of tropes that were put into this book was only a disservice to the, like, the potential this book had. I'm not doing a great job explaining it, but I feel like she'd done half as much and put just as much time into it, it could have been so freaking good. Like, I don't know. Like, there's lots of good ideas here. I mean, there's a reason these are popular tropes in YA books, because they're interesting and they can be complex and they can tell really great stories. But it's because we got all of them at a surface level. We didn't get much depth on a lot of them, it felt like. So yeah. I don't know. I think for it to be a good NA book, we would need to lose some of the stuff and beefing up.
I think that's what keeps it YA. Like, that's what makes it decidedly a YA book. Like, ultimately, like, when you look at everything that everyone just said, it, like, ultimately becomes just like a YA book.
It's where it's supposed to be. Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of.
I had a quick follow-up question. Ooh. And I just want to ask this, Mary, specifically to kind of talk through this, because we already invoked the name Pierce Brown in a couple times talking about Red Rising. I often say that I think that Red Rising is like a B+ book, depending on how you read it, from like a rating perspective. But Golden Sun, the second
book,
is like a solid A.
Are you too good for stars? Are you too good for 5 out of 5? You got to give it a...
I rank sorry, out of 10. So going. Like, it's a 4 or a 3.5 or whatever, depending on how you feel about it. Sure. But with the sequel, do you feel like it dramatically levels that up in a similar way? Like,
ooh,
there's
a huge question.
Jump between book 1 and book 2. Does that happen, in your opinion, with Red Queen?
I would say it does
get a
lot more...
in Red Rising.
Yeah, I would say it gets more complex. A lot of the things that, like, we're wondering about, the tropes kind of just get, like, stretched out a little bit more. Do I think it's necessarily, like, completely changing the entire series and making it more NA with more world building and all of the things we've been critiquing? No, but it does, I think, give Mare a little bit more of a personality. She gets a little more agency. Her relationship with Cal is really interesting because she still has that disdain for him in book 2, but they end up having to work together, obviously, given their situation at the end of book 1. And of course, her brother's back and they're trying to find all of these other mutants. And that's like a really cool storyline. So I don't know. Like, I do think book 2 is better, personally, but you can't read book 2 without reading book 1. So, well, I don't know if that answered your question.
Right. And that's the same thing. It's like, it totally did, because that's often what I say with Red Rising. Like, you might like it. It's a little trope filled, but book 2 is where, like, the game
changes. It's like ACOTAR.
Book 1?
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's kind of like what we say about ACOTAR. But I do think the difference is, like, ACOTAR is a good book on its own. Like, it's not, I think the series gets even better. But yeah, like, we do see that. Like, sometimes you need that set up first book to really let a character flourish in the second and the third of the whatever, how many other books in the series. Thanks, Cross. Wow. It is okay when we let you speak sometimes. Interesting.
Wow. Well, speaking of ratings.
Yeah. I'm like, let's go through and do a roundup of, you know, we had a lot to say, obviously. So what do we think? What are our ratings? Mary, I'll let you go first.
Okay.
God. Mary, I'll let you go first.
When I read it, I loved it. That's why we're here. But and it sparked a reading renaissance for me, which I'm really grateful for that. I did eventually go back and read the selection. Fuck the lady at Cherry Street Books. Just kidding. Adore her. She's wonderful. Please go visit their shop. But no, I did kind of struggle through a reread, mostly because we were already texting and talking about the story, like, as I was rereading it. And the similar things that you guys had brought up, I was now coming with a more critical lens. So, like, my second reread, A solid, generous 3.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We love growth.
We do.
I give it a 1.5, but I'll bump it to a 2 because I love Mary so much. And I know that we're reading Outlander later and you're all going to come for me.
I don't want your pity.
But to be fair, I give a 3 to a book. If it's 3 and up for me means I'd recommend it. And 3 is like, it was good, but I probably wouldn't read it again. So a 2 is like, meh, but I'm not going to put it through the paper shredder. So
that's aggressive.
Good. Great.
Yeah. I think that I'm also kind of around there. I'm a little higher, I think, than Lynn's, but I'm at like a 2.5 to 3, maybe 2.75. It was fun and silly, but it also, like, it felt kind of like a grocery list almost, with extra parts.
I rated this one 3.5 stars, and I said this earlier that I had a lot of personal drama happening while I was reading this, and so I think that if I would have had more time to read it and more brain power, I think that I would have had a really different opinion. Either I would have gotten totally sucked in and read the whole series, or I would have totally borderline DNF'd
it. It's not too late.
or just forgotten that I read it in the first place, which quite happens to me more than I care to admit. I think that for me, I just never got sucked in. I never said, oh my God, I want to go pick it up. And I think it was a good story. I like her writing style. I think she's, you know, there were no grammatical errors. There were no typos. And that's enough for 2 stars for me, the most part, because I read a lot of KU. So like, at first she's got, you know, that solid base. But I just think there were a lot of things happening that I was like, okay, let's move on. Or okay, let's add some context. And I think that would have bumped it up another star. So I kind of want to do a Mary and read this again in like 2 or 3 years and just like see what I think and see if it latches or grasps or if I still have the same opinion.
I rated this 3 stars when I read it for the first time in 2021. And then before my reread this year for our episode, I was like a little bit worried that maybe I had been too harsh. But now after rereading it, I think I might have been too generous. But also, I'm just going to stick with it and like stay with 3 stars. Fine, that's where we're at. I'm sort of rounding up because I do appreciate when a love triangle happens in the middle isn't a fucking coward and kisses them both. I'm here for that. I'm no, not brothers. Well, actually, I mean, I might have read a few books a little more similar to that. If you're interested in family stuff, let me know. I got Rex. Sarah Kate's great about that. But anyway, no, I'm sticking with 3 stars. I'm entertained and it's fine. It's kind of where I'm at.
I'll tell you what. While I didn't read the book, I had a blast on this episode. I think Aww. You guys tore into it and talked about it in a fun and educational way, and also one that was never demeaning or like approaching that in any Aww. Facet. And I thought it was a great time. It was also very Aww. Funny. Kudos to Mary, per Lindsay's point. I have more than a couple of times been terrified of introducing PJ to something that I like deeply personally love and have been fortunate that he's never torn me apart or eviscerated. Given your 3.5-star, 3-star review, you know, it's not something deeply or personal, but you know.
Or maybe I'm just saying that to protect my
we
feelings.
We do love tearing you apart on this podcast.
No, what if I'm just like, we still have time to turn it around. Mary, fuck you. Fuck your family. I hate your books.
This is a just personal kidding. Slight no. against you, and I'll no. never trust your opinion on anything ever again.
Across every episode that you record, this
hey,
shouldn't be a 5
out of 5.
You guys
said pick a YA book. I picked the most
you
YA
sure
book.
Did. Yeah.
You're welcome.
You remember
sure
did.
The assignment.
Understood the assignment. But I will say, our backup, our second book choice, was going to be The Kiss of Deception by Mary Pearson.
I couldn't let you guys touch that book. I'm sorry.
And after reading that, no, but I gave that shit 5 stars. So I don't know.
Maybe she does not give 5 stars very often.
I don't.
It's really good, but don't read it. I don't want to know what you think. Leave it to me, please.
Keep that one safer. Keep it secret.
All right, Crossan, we got a little bit of a mini segment here for you, just since you were so nice and gave us so many nice compliments. We have a little ad lib here written by ChatGPT. Wow. Which feels right, because this book feels like it was written by AI. But I'm just kidding, Mary. We love you. So we're going to need you to fill in the blanks. I'll say what we need. You tell us what word you want to use. And Tiff, do you want to fill out the thing? All right. Cross, pick an adjective.
Colorful.
Colorful. A random Greek word.
I'm going to go with gyro, the sandwich.
Gyro? G-Y-R-O?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
All right. Pick a plural noun.
Toilets.
Plural noun. Toilets? Plural?
Toilets. Yep, plural.
Okay, yep. Great. Pick a name.
Marathi Barathi.
Marathi Barathi.
Marathi. Oh, that's just Mayor Burrow, but different.
Different font.
Your favorite type of rock.
My favorite?
Well, it could be any rock.
There's something to choose from.
Pick a rock.
Just pick one.
We'll go with granite.
Granite, wow. Bougie. A male name. Wow. You could self-insert here, Cross.
I could. I absolutely could self-insert. I am going to go with, oh man, my gut instinct says to say Sam, but I'm going to go with Neil.
Neil. Love. Okay, supernatural ability.
Let's go with fire breathing.
Fire breath. Weapon. Of course. Great choice. Okay. A new adjective.
A different adjective. Loud.
Loud. Magical object.
Ooh. A pondering. An orb in which
pondering
one ponders.
Pondering orb. Prescription drug name.
Ooh. Let's go.
Make it easy to spell just for me.
You know, I'm trying to think of
Ozempic. Duh.
I mean,
Ozempic.
There you go. Come on. Love it. We'll do Ozempic. It's so good.
An old timey profession.
A proctor.
A proctor. What is a proctor?
We have those now.
It administers all kinds of tests in addition to like land. Now. I guess you could go with like a prospector instead.
Prospector.
If you.
There you go. Prospector. And finally, last. A different blue. One. Blue. Excellent. All right. We are finishing up the paragraph. And in a moment, it will be read dramatically to you by everyone's favorite teacher, Tiff.
Hey!
Oh, I'm sorry. Everyone's favorite high school teacher, Tiff. Shit. Thank you. I didn't mean that, Mary.
Thank you.
Shit on Mary.
It's because I recommended Red Queen, isn't
it? No!
Fuckers.
All right. Here we go. The Colorful Rebellion. In Yiro, the colorful toilets have ruled harshly for ages. Marathi Barathi, with a hidden fire-breathing talent, joins the rebels after meeting their leader, Granite. Armed with a katana, she sneaks into the loud, pondering orb that could end the tyranny. Torn between her mission and feelings for Ozempic, a mysterious prospector, Marathi Barathi's blue courage will decide the fate of her world.
Honestly, 5 out of 5. I'm totally.
I was gonna say that was great.
That sounds like a Victorian yearbook.
It's great.
I love interest Ozempic, a mysterious prospector.
Do you think that he'll betray her? Out of curiosity.
I just love that ChatGPT's version of like, I think we literally were just like, make a Mad Lib, and it like just made like 80% of the words ones you could choose instead of like crafting any version of a story around
and
it.
Like prescription drug.
It still
drug.
Sounds plausible.
It does, I know.
Because there would be a mysterious prospector named Ozempic. Because what does that mean?
Oh, absolutely.
And
look at the tag.
Gen Alpha has kids. Like Gen Alpha has kids and they're like, hey, little Ozempic, come get your snack. Also, I their leader, Granite and Ozempic. Awesome. Can Granite and Ozempic fall in love?
They better.
Yeah, it's a true
story. That's book three.
Is it big or small, then?
That's book three. Book three.
Mm-hmm. I like it. Well, excellent. Speaking of our wonderful YA Toilet Rebellion, you just fell into an arena and you discovered your hidden power. As you wipe away a scrape of weird colored blood, your hidden power comes to life. Ooh. What color is your blood and what power do you have? And Kelsey, I'm putting you on the spot. You go
first.
Oh,
hell yeah. As you fucking should. So I think as you should. On the spot, front and center, exhibitionist, if I shall be so brave.
You shall.
Because my secret power is that I just make everyone uncontrollably horny.
Yes.
Like instant sex appeal. I can just beat them up. Because they're also turned on that they can't focus. So just hot. Power is hot. And obviously my blood is purple and sparkly because as it should be. Thank you. Thank you and good night.
Love it.
So long and
I'm failing
night.
To see how this is different than you just now.
Oh, I was going to say the same thing, actually.
It's the purple blood.
Yeah. Oh, the purple blood is the thing that's different. That's true.
Right.
I don't know. Have you seen me bleed?
That's so true.
Cross?
No.
That's a really uncomfortable question to ask.
Whoa.
I've never seen me bleed.
Now I have to think about all
do
of
you
the wanna? Times.
At our we're like getting into details.
Fatty retreat weekend, Kelsey. It's going down. Somebody's bleeding.
Oh. Yeah.
We're all going on
timber.
Probably.
By the way, follow us on Instagram for live updates of that, please.
Books and Baddies Pod. This is Addie, and my blood would be as shiny and sparkly as it gets because my superpower or secret power is that I can distract people with my distractibility. So boom, squirrel, look something shiny. Look something shiny.
Were you,
there it is. Imagine.
What color is your blood?
All of a sudden, what?
What color is your
I said it's shiny and sparkly.
Oh,
like, and it catches the light. And
you
when you are driving down the street and there's a golden retriever, you're like, oh my God, look. And that's my
is it like, is it like clear and shiny and silvery? Because that just sounds like ejaculate.
It's like metallic.
Okay.
No, it's like metallic. Like, so it's aluminum
Edward
foil.
Cullen ejaculate.
Oh,
Yes. Wait, like kind of like the unicorn
Edward
blood.
Cullen ejaculates.
Ooh, yeah, silvery.
Ooh. The ejaculi. Ooh.
Or like mercury.
Yes, like aluminum foil. Yes, like shiny. Aluminum foil. Catches the light.
Nice.
Aluminum foil?
I don't know. What else is it called? Tin foil?
I like aluminum foil.
I get it. Okay.
It's shiny. It's sparkly. It gets your attention.
I'm being, distracted by it right now. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, yeah. I was going to say, did you notice this tangent we went on? Because I distracted you with my distractibility.
So powerful. I would also have purple blood, but more like lavender-y. And yes. I think it smells really nice. Ooh. And my power would be that I can control the weather. So not quite just, not electricity, not just lightning.
Okay,
but like,
Violet.
All of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ooh. I like it. That's I really like cute. It.
Will you wrap me up in a tornado and put me at the eye of
Certainly.
Your storm? Please.
Wow.
Thank you.
I want to be at the eye of your storm.
Yeah. I want to be your Sharknado, baby.
Sharknado, baby.
Okay, sorry.
I think that my blood would be like orange, because like red, it's already, it's normally red. So going in the red family, though, I think that I'd go more towards orange than like pink. So I'm going to say that it's like a dark burnt orange kind of. And then I think that, like, I know it's basic, but as an Aries, I feel like having firepower would just be so fun and so convenient and so good. And I would never be cold again, which like sounds awesome.
True.
Tiff, it's not basic, it's classic. It's a classic. Yeah.
You know what?
You're a classy bitch.
You're so right. I am a classy bitch. Thank you.
Also, as another Aries seen and heard.
The Fire Nation. Hello. Love them.
Yes.
Yes.
Hi. Attacked.
Oh, that's it. Yeah. They did. Everything was fine until.
Until.
Well, my blood is definitely blue. Blue Lives Matter.
Blue-blooded American.
<Just kidding>.
Girl.
From the stilts.
No, but actually, I want to go like a nice emerald green blood, personally. And I definitely, I like the power to like just show up and make people feel immediately inadequate. So they just
Slay.
Give up. You
Slay.
Know, like just Virgo things.
I'm logging off.
You just like get in their head.
And that is it.
They're like, nothing is worth it.
I'm like, wow, that's it. Like, did you not come prepared or did you like sleep in or something? Interesting. Weird.
So powerful. I'm feeling it.
That's so good.
Couldn't be me, but you know, whatever floats your boat. Chase your bliss, I guess. And they just like
you know? What is happening? There's so many things going on. So my color blood would be gray. I'm colorblind, so I wouldn't be able to
Wait,
tell
what?
You what color it is.
Lord right?
Just
Wait,
just,
sorry, what?
Just like
You're just dropping
We're
that.
Just going to start there.
Wait, this daddy lore
We're starting
is,
there. But,
this is new daddy
but
lore.
My
know
obvious
that.
Power
that.
Is to remind you that this is a visual medium. Or that this isn't
a
visual medium.
It is a visual medium.
It is. It
Wait,
is.
So, I got
all
it.
All
it
that just happened visually.
So you can't see that Kelsey so is now naked.
I am. I'm stripped down that's to a, my drawers. A, yep. I'm streaking.
To
I actually... Everyone can see my tramp stamp with daddy's face on it. Everyone's shocked.
Kelsey
freaking out.
Loves that I'm made fun of her. She appreciates it. I feel like maybe it's time to wrap it up. So thanks, of course, to our podcast, Colorblind Daddy, Cross of Words and Whiskey, for helping us keep on track and sounding and looking, because we're a visual medium, as pretty
yes.
as we look. Also, check out all the links in our show notes. You can find our schedule, Patreon, previous episodes, and all of our important social content and social media channels all in one convenient place. And remember, hotties can read whatever they want. So as Mary likes to say, chase your bliss, baby baddies.
Thanks for the fun, everyone. Don't forget to read King's Cage and follow Victoria Aveyard on TikTok.
Yay!
Bye!
Yeah.
Bye!
We love you.
Bye! Love you.